All right, back on the Young Turks. I want to start with one more comment about the Kendall Jenner thing, mm-hmm. and then a very political thing, and then the spankings.
Okay.
All right. So, I actually want to make 2 points about Kendall Jenner. One, Irina made a good point. I think they darkened her face in the ad.
Yeah, maybe they did. Or look, I'm just playing devil's advocate because I have no idea. But like, everyone's getting spray tans, so they might have just like spray tanned the shit.
I know,
out of her.
But they are meticulous with mm-hmm. those ads.
Yeah, probably.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So now that's the kind of cultural appropriation mm-hmm. that is a little revolting. Like mm-hmm. normally, I'm like, appropriate away. We're a melting pot. Take the kebab. Take the bagel yeah. and lox. Let's have fun, right? And the cornrows and et cetera, right? And yeah. everybody doesn't agree with me. But when you darken a white model so she can seem more hip in a protest thing, like, I'm starting to get pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, so in that context, if they did do that, I can see why there'd be concern. But okay, I'm not a fan of spray tans. I have only gotten 2 spray tans in my entire life. One time it was at someone's house and it was a terrible, terrible decision. I was definitely orange. And then I never got a spray tan until my wedding day, like the day before my wedding day, because I'm like the pastiest person on the planet. And if you're pasty and you wear a white dress, it doesn't look so great. So if you, in that context, when I got a spray tan for my wedding, are there people who get offended by that? Like, I'm curious.
No, I don't think so. Unless it's John Boehner and Donald Trump who think you're appropriating their orangeness.
I hope I don't look orange on my wedding day.
No, I'm scared about that. No, I'm just saying spray tans in general. Spray tans.
Yeah.
Okay. The second thing is Pepsi finally took at first they resisted taking the mm-hmm. ad down. Then they mm-hmm. finally took it down, and then they issued an apology. But my favorite part, which we didn't get to in the story, is then they issued an apology to Kendall Jenner.
No. Not only Kendall Jenner, they issued an apology to everyone in her family. But why? Her family wasn't involved in this ad.
You know why? Because to them, those celebrities are gods.
Yeah.
And they're like, they got Kendall Jenner to be in this ad, and she was going to be the next Cindy Crawford because mm-hmm. it's 1992 again. Mm-hmm. And then they let her down because this ad, the ad wasn't.
It was a bad ad.
And you know the Kardashians were super mad because it messed with their brand, and they might not work with Pepsi again.
You know,
like, the whole thing's unbearable.
No one messes with the Kardashian brand more than the Kardashians themselves. Okay, yeah. So does that even mean? Like, they're messing with their brand. Like,
no, but it means a lot for now it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. But I mean, to your point, I mean, their brand got started in porn.
Yeah.
So spare me the outrage that your brand was a little tarnished with how Pepsi didn't do the ad exactly right.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, Kendall Jenner had nothing to do with the porn. It was her older sister. Okay.
Didn't their fame start with the celebrity murder, though?
Well, no, let's be more accurate. You're right. Mm-hmm. Celebrity murder, yeah. OJ, and that's how
their dad defending OJ.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and their dad was OJ's best friend. That's mm-hmm. how they became known in the world. Number two, Kim Kardashian was Paris Hilton's best friend and wrote her dick. She did. That's how she got famous. Everybody's like, yeah. If you don't remember, Paris Hilton was the hottest shit in the world and nonstop. And then Kim Kardashian started showing up with her at parties, and everybody's like, all right, Paris, whatever. Kim's hotter than you. And then just as she was starting to rise up, she released the porn. I'm sorry, it was leaked onto the internet, and she was so upset about it as they shot it with lights and background music, and she made millions off of it. But she was really, really upset about it.
Yeah.
And then, boom, it all took off.
And then Playboy, and then she regretted Playboy.
And then she showed her tits again, but she's like, I can't believe they showed my tits. I mean, we went over that 1,000 times. But now their brand might be tarnished by how Pepsi did that ad. Mm-hmm. So, unbearable! Okay. So, now, onto a deeply political story. So there was a race in the 34th district mm-hmm. here in LA. Javier Becerra became the Attorney General of California, taking Kamala Harris's job. Kamala, I'm not sure how to pronounce her first name, which is my bad. She's a U.S. Senator now.
Yeah.
And anyway, so 24 people ran in the primary, and the results came in last night.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there was several Bernie Sanders staffers. high drama there. And so, was it going to be two Bernie Sanders staffers against each other, or was it going to be one Bernie Sanders staffer against the establishment candidate? And I'm like, how do people even know? I asked Dave Weigel, the Washington Post. I'm like, how do people even know who the establishment candidate is?
Right.
Do they like send out like, ooh? And it turns out they do. It's actually simple. Mm-hmm. The establishment endorses him. So Javier Becerra endorsed Jimmy Gomez, and so did every other top Democrat.
Oh, I see.
So once they endorsed him, that magically puts him as the top contender, and he gets more money. He spends more money. And so he came in number one. In California, it's open primaries that leads to a runoff, with, and you don't have to be from different parties. So it's going to be two Democrats in the runoff in the general election. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the second person, was it a Bernie Sanders staffer?
It.
Wendy Carrillo, Arturo Carmona, I think there was one other, Alejandra Campoverde, who has done some work at TYT, was running. Mm-hmm. This was a really interesting race. No, none of them. Robert Ahn came out of nowhere and came in second. But that's the whole reason I'm telling you this story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes politics is not that complicated. In these primaries, there aren't a lot of voters. So Robert Ahn goes on to the general election. You know how many votes he got? 5,504 votes.
Wow.
And you know how he got them and how he came out of nowhere to finish second? He's Korean. Mm-hmm. He went to Koreatown, got 4,000 people in Koreatown to send in their ballots early.
Wow.
That's 4,000 out of 5,500.
That's some hustle, though. That's some hustle.
That's exactly right. Now, I think that, you know, look, this is...
I'm sure I could do the same with the Armenian community.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm sure I could do the same with the Turkish community and get all seven votes. Okay. So, I got to give him credit, man.
Wow.
Like you said, that's... working hard, thinking outside the box, and as everybody else is spending money left and right doing different things, he just went door to door, gathered up all these votes and mm-hmm. sent them in, and boom, he's in the runoff.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know much about him, so I'm just saying awesome based on, you know, the hustle and what he did to get to the point where he's at. But as you were talking about that, I had a jank moment because you mentioned Koreatown. And I don't know if you know this, but Koreatown right now is on and popping. It really is.
Oh, okay.
Like restaurant wise, nightlife wise. Like Koreatown used to be kind of a sketchy area at mm-hmm. night, especially, but now
yeah,
it's.
You gotta watch out for those Koreans.
No, but it's not about. It's not, by the way, it's not just Koreans living in Koreatown. Like we all know that, right?
Okay.
But now there's like all this development there, and there's a downside, you know, to that kind of gentrification, but. There's like the top fried chicken restaurant in Koreatown now, and there's usually like a line looping around like the entire city.
Is it like fried chicken, or Korean fried chicken?
No, fried chicken, and it is fucking, I don't even like fried chicken, but it is bananas.
Is there bananas actually in the fried chicken?
I mean, I'm sure if you request it, they'll do it, but it's like the best fried chicken. They're only open like 3 days out of the week for only a few hours a day. And people will wait for 2 hours just to order that chicken.
It's such an LA thing.
It is, yeah.
Look, I love good food, and I love fried chicken. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like my dad. My dad, if there's a 1 minute wait, he's like, why we wait here when there is other restaurant right there? But dad, this is a good restaurant. It's food either way. Food.
Yeah.
Why you wait 1 minute, okay? So I'm not in that camp, but yeah. I ain't waiting 2 hours.
I agree. No. The only reason why I tried it is because you can pre-order for a party of 10, and one of our friends did it and invited us to a fried chicken party. It was great.
That sounds fun. That sounds great. No, I mean, Koreatown was cool back in the day for other reasons. Like, their nightlife was a little surreptitious. Like, there was shady stuff going on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but that's changing. Yeah,
they apparently changed that. I didn't know that. I was talking to some guys a couple of weekends ago, and they're like, oh, no, they don't do that stuff in Koreatown anymore. I'm like, really? I never did it, but it sounded fun. That's kind of a shame. See, that got gentrified too.
Damn it.
Okay, the downsides of gentrification. Okay, anyways, look, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. I feel bad that the Bernie staffers didn't win. I want as progressive a candidate as we can. Jimmy, but they all went left. And so the articles that talk about it, about the race, they're so funny. I don't want to get too into it, but it was like, they're all like, they were forced to go left because of the this was one of the few districts that went for Bernie Sanders in the primaries in California, and because of the current climate in the country. Like, because for the mainstream media, even if it's like the LA Times, like going left is so terrible, so horrific. They were forced. Who would go left voluntarily? Mm-hmm. They were forced to go left. And also the implication is, of course, they don't mean it. What? Who could actually believe in being progressive? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they had to pretend to be progressive, which maybe might be true. Mm-hmm. Well, for the Bernie guys, it wasn't true. That wasn't the case at all. They actually are progressive, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But and so just the mainstream media assumptions drive me fucking nuts. And then they get called the liberal media. My ass, they're the liberal media.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. You know, I'm curious to find out more about Gomez and Ott. Okay. So now the fun spanking stories. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they were fun at the time. And if you're old school Young Turks member, you might have heard one or two of these stories before. I got spanked 3 times by my dad. Mm-hmm. Once for the library incident, mm-hmm, where I thought. Mm-hmm. And the reason my dad spanked me is that because you had to teach very healthy respect for teachers.
Oh yeah,
teachers
definitely
are not to be messed with. And what do you think, you're funny writing a note like that? And he found out that it was because I was disrupting class, unacceptable. Mm-hmm, okay, mm-hmm. Spanking is in order when that happens. And then another time, I was watching the Super Bowl, Eagles versus Raiders, 81. So mm-hmm. I was probably 11. And I made the mistake of telling my dad that book report or whatever was late. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I mentioned it to him. And he's like, okay, you have to do it right now. And I'm like, but no, Dad, it's the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm definitely going to do it, but after the Super Bowl. He's like, turn it off. I was like, no, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, here we go, ass whooping. Okay. Because he was so upset that I wasn't doing my homework and watching some stupid football game. And you know my dad, he doesn't care about sports at all.
Yeah.
So he's like, it's same thing every time. They go up and down, up and down. This guy wins, that guy wins. What's the difference?
Totally. Totally. He gets it. Your dad gets it.
He gets
it. Yeah. Dogan gets it. I agree with him with the restaurants. Don't want to wait. And I also agree with him on sports. But the whole thing about respecting your teachers, that is definitely like an immigrant thing, right? Because I remember like the American students had parents that would always side with the student, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, the teacher's wrong. I'm going to come in and fight for my kid. That was not the case with me. And it was not the case with my mom when she was a student. So this is one of the most amazing stories that my mom's ever told me, and I want to share it with you guys. So I didn't know this, but there was a lot of discrimination in Armenia at the time that my parents were kids. And it was discrimination against the diaspora who left after the genocide or during the genocide and then wanted to return back to their country. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my like family members weren't really born in Armenia. Like my dad was born in Damascus. My grandfather on my mom's side was actually born in Turkey. My grandmother on my mom's side was born in Palestine. Mm-hmm. So, but they wanted to go back to Armenia, obviously. Like that's their land, that's their home. So mm-hmm. finally they go back, and there's a difference between the diaspora and what, I don't know how you say it in English, but Armenians refer to them as Teratsis. Teratsis are people who never left. Mm-hmm. They somehow mm-hmm. miraculously managed to stay in Armenia even after everything that happened. And so the Teratsis would discriminate against the diaspora that would come back, right? And so both my mom and dad shared stories, and this is the one that really stood out to me. So apparently one of my mom's teachers, who was a Teratsi, got mad at my mom for some reason. Oh no, was talking shit about my uncle, my mom's brother. And my mom was like, what? How dare you? Like something like that, like basically defending her brother.
Mm-hmm. And sounds like
I know,
someone
I know.
We know maybe.
There's a lot of similarities. Uh-huh. And so the teacher told my mom, what is your mother for you guys to be anything? I mean, obviously I'm translating. Mama tin shavur dumi banliness, right? Which is
okay. Oh no, the Klingons are attacking.
Okay. So like basically, you know, saying horrible things about her mom.
Okay.
And like my mom lost it. So she grabbed a chair and she threw it at the teacher.
Whoa.
Okay.
Well, the Teratsi's not gonna have
Teratsi's,
that.
Right. So of course, news gets back to my grandma. And my mom's defending my grandma, and she's also defending her brother. She's defending her family, which I think most people would do in a situation like that. Maybe don't throw the chair, but you would want to defend your family. My mom got beaten to a pulp.
Wow.
Yeah.
For disrespecting a teacher.
For disrespecting the teacher. Even as this teacher discriminates against them because they were in the fucking diaspora. Their family members went through a fucking death march, okay, and survived miraculously. And then they came back because they love Armenia and they get discriminated for that. Like, it's insane. I couldn't even believe that that was going on at that time, but apparently it did.
The human ability to discriminate against one another is endless. It's an unbelievable. How could those two groups discriminate against
each other? How? You were all victims of the same thing, right? And some of you were forced, literally fucking forced, to walk through the desert. And you, really, you're going to go ahead and discriminate against them because they want to come back?
Did your mom's family go back to what is current day Armenia or current day Turkey?
No, current day Armenia. So my mom was born in Armenia. She was born in Yerevan, which is the capital.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when was your dad born? Right around 1940 or so, probably.
Because my dad, 1948.
Oh, okay. He's around my mom's age. Mm-hmm. So he's right.
Your mom is in her 70s.
She's about to turn 70 in 9 days.
Oh wow, she does not look 70. That's amazing.
So that's So that makes sense because 1915. So they're down in Syria, and then your dad is born later, And did he go directly from Syria to the U.S.?
No. So he was born in Syria, and then I believe at the age of 2, his family moved back to Armenia. But he doesn't remember anything about Syria. And then also interesting thing about Armenians that I never put the puzzle pieces together until now. So there are a lot of Armenians who keep defending Trump, even though Trump is hideous to refugees, a lot of which are Armenians living in places like Syria who are looking for refuge, right? So Armenia has taken in a lot of refugees. No one talks about that, but they have because they know that, hey, this is an issue. So why are they defending Trump? He doesn't like you or care about you. And I realize what it is. It's because of Trump's ties to Russia. Armenians love Russia. Russia continuously defends Armenia. Russia was under Soviet rule. Armenia was under Soviet rule, right? And so they think Russia's great. And they're like, yeah, Trump, Russia, awesome. We don't care if they're going to discriminate against Armenian refugees who might want to come into the United States.
Okay, I'm going to say two more random things related to this. And we'll save the last spanking story for another show. It's a little ironic. I totally get why, because the Russians and the Armenians were united, and they're both Christian, and so there's that obvious bond. But the Soviets totally screwed them. They said, you're going to get an independent Armenia. And then they were like, just kidding. We're going to take you over. Now, later, of course, they became independent when the Soviet Union broke apart. You would think they'd be a little bit more pissed about that.
I think that there are probably, various opinions on all that. But what I have heard from a lot of different people, this is based on anecdotal evidence, is that Armenia under Russian rule, Soviet rule, was better. A lot of people wish that they can go back to those days because right now Armenia is struggling economically. They're surrounded by enemies. They don't really have an export industry that makes them a lot of money. They're struggling, so I get it. And so with communist rule, people felt like they were better taken care of.
And you're right, Anna. The issue is enormously complicated. But here, the red states in America, the red states take more than the blue states. So they get more government largesse than the blue states do. And then they ironically complain about the government. But if Armenia doesn't have a lot of natural resources, they would have gotten more help from the Soviet Union than, let's say, Kazakhstan, which has a ton of natural resources. They probably would have given more than they received.
Right, yeah.
And there was great upheaval and chaos after the Soviet Union fell apart, and people didn't know what to do. They had these government jobs for their entire lives.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they're like, okay, free market, good luck, good night, go. And some of the oligarchs knew how to play that game and became enormously successful in Russia. But not a lot of oligarchs coming out of Armenia. So, I'm sure there probably are some, and I really don't know the details at all.
Yeah.
But that probably hurt too. So I get that. And now back to the refugees in Turkey. So Turkey is taking in, I think, more refugees than anyone else in the world, in the millions, at least 2 million. It might even be up to 4 million now from Syria, which is amazing, and they should deserve a lot of credit for that. And my parents' hometown is actually Kilis. It's a tiny little town near the Syrian border, and they're up for a Nobel Peace Prize because of how many refugees they took in. So that's wonderful, and I'm proud of that. But realpolitik, let's keep it real. So why is Erdogan doing it? For a number of reasons, and some of them are fine. The other reason is that is 4 million new Muslim voters for Erdogan. Okay. Now, he's going to turn them all into citizens. Now, they're all Muslim. Turkey's 99% Muslim at this point, right? I'll tell you another amazing fact in a second. But they're more, A, indebted to Erdogan, who brought them in, and two, coming in from that region, they're a little bit more fundamentalist than the average Turk is. The average Turk is more secular, and hence less likely to vote for Erdogan. So slightly more fundamentalist and indebted to him, 4 million new voters, okay, 2 to 4 million, I forget the exact number now. So that's how politics is played, okay? So that sucks if you're a secular Turk. But it is great that at least they have some refuge.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt the same way about Armenia taking in refugees, you know? And I think the reason why Armenia did it is, I mean, I don't think that there's really a political reason. It's more like, well, Syria helped us tremendously. They gave our people refuge, and so we need to do the same.
So I don't remember the exact dates, and I'll probably screw this up a little bit, so don't quote me exactly. But I saw this in my sister's thesis. She gave this presentation in Taiwan, actually. She was invited to Taiwan to give a presentation about her area of expertise, which is the mahalle in Turkish means the community. And so there was all these different neighborhoods that were called mahalles. And so that's her anthropological, cultural expertise. And it was an amazing presentation. I'm super proud of her. And so this is where the numbers are roughly right, but don't quote me. I think around 1850, Istanbul was 50% non-Muslim. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's now 99% Muslim.
That is pretty amazing.
Okay. So there was a huge Jewish contingent. There's still a decent-sized Jewish contingent, but obviously not anywhere near the size it used to be. And obviously there were Armenians, there were tons of Greeks. Greeks were probably the largest of the groups that were there. And it made me think, fuck, that was so much better, right? You know, God, like for a little while, they had something going there. It was a cosmopolitan city, it was one of the most important cities in the world, and they had real diversity. And it was the capital, that's where they you know, had the Ottoman Empire that for 500 years.
I don't know. It's just, I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't perfect. Like there was a lot of discrimination against non-Muslims in Turkey at that time. So it's not like it was this great secular, you know, utopia. There were serious fundamental issues there. But I will say that Turkey is not headed in a good direction right now. And you know, my parents were thinking about possibly going to Armenia this year. I've never been to Armenia. So I was interested in it. I'm like, sure, let's do it. And then they're like, maybe we can also do a little bit of time in Istanbul. And I was like, nope, no, we're not. I don't want to go to Istanbul.
Oh, wow.
Really? Fuck no.
Why? Because of the bombings or?
Definitely the bombings. Just like the retaliation that certain people face if they speak out against Turkey in any way. That kind of stuff concerns me. So why would I put myself in a situation where I could possibly be in any type of danger? So.
I know, that sucks. Look, I think about it. You know, I've criticized Erdogan endlessly. And he imprisons people who criticize him. So now I'm you know, I think twice and I'm gone back. I have not gone back since 2014. And I've now turned down a couple really cool conferences that invited me there that would have paid me to go and stuff. And Istanbul's a gorgeous, gorgeous city. You should all see it. But now they're, you know, in the, they're ruining it with their right-wing politics. And so last thing on the Ottoman Empire, and we could go on, and there's lots of ups and downs to the Ottoman Empire, as we all know. And one of the things they did, you're right, it was, of course, nowhere near a utopia. And if you're a Muslim, back then you had some privileges that non-Muslims didn't have, and non-Muslims had to pay higher taxes.
Yes.
But they did give a little bit of autonomy to their different places that they ruled, and that actually provided stability for the empire. So it was not out of the goodness of their heart, but it was forward thinking and it was smart. But again, if you were not Muslim, you had to pay higher taxes and you had to do X, Y, and Z. Okay. But one great, great thing that the Ottomans did that, doesn't get nearly enough credit, that I might have mentioned one other time in the 15 years of the show, is that during the Spanish Inquisition, do you remember the story?
Maybe.
Yeah, so the Catholics are killing everybody in, in Spain. They're killing the Protestants, and they're killing the Jews. And the Ottoman fleet pulls up to Spain. And the Spanish are like, what the fuck? Because the Ottoman fleet ain't nothing to fuck with at the time, right? And they're like, so what brings you here? And they're like, we want the Jews. We'll take the Jews off your hands. Okay. They took 400,000 Jews and rescued them.
That's awesome.
Okay. Now, again, forward thinking, not obviously just out of the goodness of their heart, they're an empire. And it, because of the, sorry, but at the time, idiot Christians and idiot Muslims didn't allow banking and they didn't allow Jews to own land. So what that did was it created this great expertise in the Jewish community in banking, because they were the only ones who could charge interest, not because they were wanted to, but because they were forced to, because nobody else would do it. And since they couldn't own land, they became merchants, right? And so the Ottomans were like, okay, let me get this right. Fairly educated class of people here that could do banking and are a merchant class. We'll take them. And then they spread them all throughout the Ottoman Empire to because of their expertise, right? But the bottom line is they saved 400,000 Jewish lives. So Turks and Jews actually have gotten along great throughout history. And the lead Turkish naval ship on its, whatever they call it, the highest pole has a little thing on it, a little container.
I know what you're talking about.
Chris Huck will know what these terms are called. Sorry, I don't know what they're called. Anyway. And inside of it, in the lead Turkish ship since the Ottoman days, is a Quran and the Torah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Isn't that super cool?
I remember the story. I didn't know that part of it, though. Cool.
So, okay. So, some good things the Ottomans did. Some bad ones.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.